You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 386. Big week this week. Jam-packed week this week. Let's roll, Autobots. And once again, this is Features Editor John Gentile scoring a lot of points with the chicks by throwing out a 30-year-old Transformer reference.
You're just scoring points with like slovenly, 32-year-old internet dudes. That's what you're
going for the live in their parents' basement demographic.
Speaking of which, I'm going to drag this out. Have you guys seen Transformers in the past like 15 years? It's terrible. It's so bad.
The movies, they were awful.
Like when I was six, I'm like, oh my God, this is such an awesome show. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Dude, those have been around forever. They came out when I was a kid. I bet you the original like line of Transformers came out in mid 80s.
That's what I'm talking about. It's bad.
Man. Yeah.
And on a side note, I don't even want to drag this out, but Tom, are you on the Danzig Facebook group Seventh House? It's kind of like the unofficial official Danzig fan club on Facebook.
Yes.
Man, does that place get weird? Or does that place get weird?
It's there's a lot. The Danzig's got this whole culture around him, like the Danzig memes. And yeah, there's all kinds of crazy Danzig. I don't know what you're talking about specifically. I guess I wasn't paying that close of attention.
Honestly, I don't know what value I get out of being in that group at all. I might have to leave because they never talk about anything of substance. They're always like, Danzig 3, who remembers that? Or, you know, Danzig 5, did you love it or did you hate it? You know, but they also do like really weird stuff sometimes. Like just a couple of minutes ago, a guy posted, I've been looking at Danzig pictures for 30 years and he never has any stubble. Does he use electrodialysis? And then the moderator tells him, I have to delete this. And then there's this huge argument. Like
Danzig's watching it. He's like, no questions about facial hair. No phone recording.
Are you allowed to talk about whether or not Danzig got electrodialysis on his face?
I actually think you might be talking about a different thing than I am, because there is a Seventh House like Facebook page, but there's also like a members one. And I just asked to join. So we'll see if I have any luck.
Oh, maybe I'm in the non-secret one or the secret. I don't know. Anyway,
if you listen, dude, if you see me needing to be approved in there,
I'll approve
for membership.
I would, but I can't. I don't have the electrodialysis.
You're not an admin.
It is a weird. You'll see, Tom. It is a weird. You think Punk News is weird? That place is weird. Anyway, let's get on today's with tonight's podcast. We got a big episode tonight. Lots to talk about. We're going to be talking about Andrew WK. We're going to be talking about tax evasion. Rather, telephone fraud, which is even better.
It's even cooler.
We're gonna be talking about Polish.
I love that story. I don't know. It made me laugh.
We're going to be talking about the Polish government getting mad at people for blasphemy, and we're going to be talking about Motorhead and a whole lot more. This is the Punk News Podcast. That was Tom Trauma, writer Tom Trauma, and also interviewer Tom Trauma, who just interviewed Cody Templeman of Teenage Bottle Rock
for like
and
one a year.
Well, people are digging it, Tom, and so keep it up. And we are also here with managing editor Adam White, who was recently recovering from a massive sick wave.
Well, that was a cool band name.
Sick wave.
Almost as good as Deathgasm. Were you sick, Adam, or were your kids sick?
It's really one and the same. I mean, my son is sick, and he has some cough thing, but he's two, so two-year-olds can't actually cope with shit in a way that anyone else would. So if you started to get a cold, you know, you'd blow your nose maybe, or take some medicine, or, you know, if you started coughing incessantly, you know, go have a glass of water or something, right? But a two-year-old doesn't know how to cope with any of that, so they just get incredibly angry and gross and
So it's like full grown man. That's the way full grown man responds when he's sick.
I mean, I hope that's not how I respond, but I mean, I'm going to find out, because the other thing about having a 2-year-old, if they have a cough, is they are going to basically cough in your mouth over and over.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. projectile coughing.
So like, and I'm sitting there trying to rock him in a chair before he goes to bed, and he just like, he turns and he looks at me like in the eyes and then just like, "Pah!" And I was like, fuck, like stop this. And he keeps doing it.
Waits for you to yawn.
But it's been a,
yes.
The big problem is that it has been an iffy sleep situation for my wife and I, because he keeps waking up and in like a panic in the middle of the night and with a fever and everything else. And like doing stuff that we're not even sure of. Like he woke up the other night and he was like, it seemed like he was convulsing and we're like, holy fuck, what's happening? And then like someone's on their phone and they're like, oh wait, if they're that young and they have a fever, one of the ways that onsets if they're that age is that they shiver violently. And I'm like, okay, but like this is my second kid. The first one didn't do this. Right. So I'm like,
you don't remember
it. I don't remember it. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. But it's been rough. It's been no one's had a good night's sleep for several days. So if I start hallucinating,
Well, speaking of,
I hate to interrupt, guys, but I just want you to know for the record, I've been approved to join the private Danzig group. So good news.
You're in for a ride.
The admin's really on top of it, dude. It took like 2 minutes.
Well, you know, during this show you uncover something there that is worth mentioning, but just chime it in.
Danzig's urine cures the common cold, Adam. You're in luck. I'll get you a vial.
Well, speaking of sick things and good nights, Adam White, he's throwing something that's pretty sick that should be a good night. He's throwing a concert up there in Toronto. Adam White, tell us about this little hoedown that you're throwing down.
Yeah, all right. So we're this is a new thing for me personally, but I'm getting involved in a handful of shows this year that we're going to be putting on. And because I am basically a child when it comes to doing anything real in music that doesn't involve the internet, anytime I do a show, it's with someone that's done a show, so they know what to do. So like we had our show down there in Philly, John, with World Inferno, and really, you know, I sort of relied on you to make that one happen and do all the work. I just showed up. This one is maybe I'm doing a shade more work, but I'm still kind of like learning from people that do this. So we're throwing a show. It's on Saturday, February 3rd at the Bovine Sex Club, which is the coolest named venue ever, at the Bovine Sex Club in Toronto. And the show is being put on by me and Mel Kay. Now, Mel Kay has been on this podcast a couple times, so if no one remembers who she was, she is she's like a long-standing music PR person in Toronto, and she does, like, if say, like, Fat Mike or Jello Biafra are doing anything Canadian, she's sort of their point person for it. Sort of like long-standing relationship with like everyone in DOA, and you know, she does a lot of stuff for, say, like Chicks Dig It guy. She basically was Fat Records Canada for a number of years. So me and Mel are putting this show on. We done a little bit of work together last year, and we got to talking, and we're like, we should put shows on. That should be a thing we do. So this is being presented by, you know, Melanie Kay and moi. Via my outlets, via Punk News and Sun Party. So we're calling this thing the Hinterland Hoedown. We spent an incredible amount of time coming up with a dumb name for what we're hoping will become a concert series. Like, an incredible amount of time. More time than doing any of the other actual work that we needed to do for this. So that's what we're calling it. And it's going to evolve. We had a bunch of concepts before we got started about what this was going to mean and how the shows were going to work and all that shit, largely inspired by all of Mr. John Gentile's antics at the summer soiree. But then we're like, you know what, let's do one of these. And if no one, you know, catches fire, then then we'll evolve it out. So we got four bands that are coming to play the Bovine on Saturday night. We almost inadvertently have made like a very traditionally punk show out of this. So we got four bands that are coming in to play this. At the top of the bill, we got a band from St. Catharines called The Lucky Ones. A very, like, I don't want to say street punk, but like a drunk punk band. They've been, actually, Tom, this seems like a kind of band that would be really up your alley after a while.
What are they called? The Lucky Ones?
Yeah. So they've been playing.
I write that down on my little sticky note.
They've been playing in Niagara for for probably the better part of a decade right now. But the guy that is the frontman of a band, Steve Stumble, he ran a record label out of St. Catharines back when I was a kid called Stumble Records. He was in a handful of bands, like any of the bands that I recognized from being on flyers on street poles when I was just like a 14-year-old were probably either a band Steve was involved in or a band like he was in. So he's one of these people that's been like weirdly instrumental to my punk rock childhood coming from where I am. So it's cool to have his band out, and they've done a bunch of, you know, they're probably don't have a lot of recognition out of the area, but you know, they've played with Stiff Little Fingers, NOFX, Forgotten Rebels. They've done stuff where, you know, the Ramones have been around. I don't exactly know if it was a show or what, but I've heard the backstage stories. So anyways, so the Lucky Ones are playing at the top of this bill. Then there's a band that I'm really excited to see. There was a garage punk band that was playing in Toronto in the late 90s called The Exploders. And they had this reputation of just being loud and raunchy and, you know, playing shows just like decked out in like bondage gear and everything. So they got back together recently. So we got them playing it, which is going to be pretty wild. We have a band coming out from Montreal called Bolo Mojo. The band, it is their first time playing in, I mean, I want to say English Canada at all. So I'm pretty excited for that. John, this band does stuff that you would like, because there's a lot of New York Dolls in their sound. There's a lot of Alice Cooper that shows up in there. They're fully bilingual as to what they're doing. So like half their songs are in French, half are in English. And they've got a couple EPs that are online. And the style of music like varies wildly from song to song. But there's a lot of glam stuff that shows up in them. And they have, and this is the bonus really, they have a keyboard player that has one arm. So...
Whoa!
Yeah, right. So you got
the band with the keyboard player with one arm. You got the guy, the Steve Stumble, the great alliterated punk name.
Yes,
you got a lot going on.
We have the crazy old.
How did the one arm keyboard player lose his arm? I hope it wasn't a drunk driving a luxury car. I hope it was like an industrial saw accident. Or
when
something.
When I first started working on this. Right when we started talking to them, and Bolo Mojo was probably one of the bands that we had talked about coming out here first, because we thought it would be cool to like do their first show in Toronto. Well, I emailed Mel and I'm like, hey Mel, I'm like, I want to talk about Bolo Mojo on my Sun Party newsletter, but I don't know anything about them, because if you Google them, like they're nowhere right now. So we're really going to break some new ground here. So can you get anything out of them? Like a bio, some info or anything like that? And the bio that Bolo Mojo sent me basically said that a Sasquatch ate his arm. Like they sent me some just like two paragraph piece of fiction. And I'm like, okay. Well,
that's a very Canadian thing to have in his arm.
I think it's pretty common up there.
It happens. It is. I mean, every missing child, they just assume it was snatched by a Bigfoot, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I feel like we would call them Sasquatches, really. Like, Bigfoots is more of a,
I think a Bigfoot.
Whatever, dude. I appeal to the.
I would say
man.
Bigfoot's like Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, like a Bigfoot, I think I feel has brown hair, but a Sasquatch has white hair.
Well, see, I would say a Yeti might have white hair, but I feel like a Yeti is more of a Himalayan thing.
Oh, is it Yeti? They're all brown.
I think they're all brown when they're younger, and then they whiten as they age.
On a side note, this band, The Exploders, is actually really cool, and their lead singer is one of the most badass-looking guys I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's always wearing, like, huge shades, and he has a gigantic, like, I don't know if you call it an afro. It's just, like, it looks like he's been electrocuted.
I thought you meant like Mike Muir, you know, like all jacked, like he's been laying outside lifting weights on Muscle Beach or something.
He looks like he's the kind of guy that might ask you for change, and if you say no, he might like pull out like a switchblade and like stab you to death and carve out your eyes. This dude's badass.
That's why I'm saying we're doing one of these shows, and then we'll see what happens from there. So, and then opening, we have a solo artist named Jen Fiorino Fiorentino that's coming out. She is a little bit of a YouTube star. And I didn't really know this at first, but like she's done a lot of like sort of like acoustic punk rock covers and stuff like that in her youth. Like, you know, she would just go on and record herself playing a cover of I don't know, some like a Hot Water Music song or an Against Me song or something like that. And she's one of these people that's racked up like tens of thousands of people that watch what she does, which I was not aware of at all. But anyways, though, she's from Markham, which is just north of Toronto. And she's, you know, she's gone and she's played sets with like Chris Cresswell from the Flatliners and Austin Lucas and people like that. And she's become a pretty big draw out at Pooza Fest in Montreal every year. So she's going to come out and kind of open up the night for us. So anyways, we have four bands that are playing this thing. It's going to be fun. We are doing this in the most sort of like low tech slap together way that you can, in that like we're not even bothering, I think, right now with like ticket sales or anything like that before the show. It's like, come to the show. It's $10. That's how it works. And we'll see what happens.
$10 Canadian. It's only like $7.50 American.
Yeah, but to all the Canadians, it's $10 Canadian. That's gotcha. How it always works, right?
Adam, this looks badass, man. The Exploders look really badass. This is definitely something I would check out. Adam, play a song from one of these bands so people can check it out. And where can they buy tickets? Oh,
they can't. They just got to go to the show. I mean, it would be great if you do want to come to the show and you are in the Toronto area. I mean, if you're not, still come to the show. But like, it's weird because like
I will.
I know for a fact there's actually people flying out from New York to come to the show, which is weird. But in any case, if you want to come and you are a listener to this podcast, let me know and I will bring you presents. You have to tell me that you're coming. Adam@punknews.org is how you do that. So all right, I'm gonna jump in and play a song right now from one of these bands. So I'm gonna play something from Bolo Mojo, and we're gonna play a track that is in French and has a French name, and I'm going to fuck it up, but it's not even a full French word, I think. It's like some sort of half French portmanteau thing. So this is a song called, Conspiraspare, I think is how you'd pronounce it. I don't know. Don't judge me on this. It's by Bolo Mojo out of Montreal. It is from their EP that they released recently called Happiness, and they're playing the Hinterland Hoedown on February 3rd, which is a Saturday, at the Bovine Sex Club in Toronto. So you should come. Here you go. Chocolat. Un voyage tout est classe.
And that was Bolo Mojo, who will be playing the Hinterland Hoedown in Toronto on February 3rd. And you should go to the Bovine Sex Club. Let's pull some quick mail. As always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Nina. She says, thanks for the podcast. I listen every week, except for when you are late or shifting weird delays into the podcast on purpose. On the end of year episode, you stated what you were hoping to do or see, what concerts and albums you were looking for. But what do you hope is to punk the punk scene as a whole? What elements do you want to go away? From Nina.
Go away.
Or what do you want to happen? She asked too.
No, go away is way more fun. I mean, what you could want to happen is something goes away. I guess you could phrase it that way.
Well,
see, that's a good question. And like my initial response was to launch into some sort of political thing, but I'm not feeling that in the punk scene, at least in my corner of it. With whatever's going on. Like, do you remember that during Bush, there was this like conservative punk movement and everything that was festering around at the same time. You remember like the infamous Daily Show interview where Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms and Michael Graves from one of the Misfits singers they don't actually talk to each other, but they're, you know, edited to be basically in this debate as two sides of a coin. But like, I don't feel like that's happening with the Trump era. Like I haven't seen some sort of like influx of weird politics into my punk rock, because I think everyone is sort of equally outraged. So not that, although that would have been the thing that I was going to reflexively jump on. Here's what I'd like to see go away or change or something like that. I'd like to see people being a little bit less safe with regards to these old bands that y'all keep propping up.
What do you mean by old band? Like 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No, I mean like there are certain bands that people I love have decided that they are going to like almost in a cute way become like massive boosters of. And there's like, I'll look online and there's people that are talking about Green Day or something, right? In this kind of like post-ironic sense where it's this a little bit like, you know what? Fuck you. I still like Green Day and we're going to talk about it. Or like, fuck you. I still like, you know, Taking Back Sunday and I'm going to talk about this a lot. And I'm like, I don't think any of these old bands need you to be their, you know, their social media cheerleader. Like, you can like them. That's fine. I'm not going to judge that. But like, there's so many people that are
especially if they're rich guys like Green Day.
Well, I mean, like there's so many bands that are out there struggling to like get people to show up to their shows to play music. That if you're gonna, you know, use your time to talk about music on the internet, which I totally encourage you to do because that's what I do. You know, don't. You don't need to, I don't know what you're trying to prove by like flaunting your massive super fandom of one of these bands. Like even bands I like, I don't know, like don't, if you're a massive Bad Religion fan, and I like Bad Religion, I'm a massive Bad Religion fan, but like that's not a great use of your time, punk scene. Like they'll do okay without you constantly chattering about them. That was an odd
point. He's asking if Danzig gets electric dialysis on his face. Is that
well, that's important, John. We need to know. The people need to know, right? I don't know. It's a trend that I feel like I've seen where like there's people that I would consider to be massive music fans, but I never see them talking about new music. And it's strange to me. This might just be like the selective like Facebook algorithm trying to fuck with me and hiding everything that I would consider new, but
I hear that as a whole, and that like you see like four or five people, they all kind of do like the same thing, like and you feel like that represents like everybody, and you're just exhausted by it.
I'm
exhausted by it.
Maybe I'm sensitive to this because like I'm putting on this show now, and I really hope people come to it. But like I'm looking at so much of the conversation that I see from my circles, and so much of it is just conversation that's reiterating over the same bands that like there's already consensus on. And I don't want to mean just bands I don't like, right? I mean like the new fucking Jeff Rosenstock record is great, right? That's no argument there from me. But is going on and doing a Jeff Rosenstock post every 2 days to your Facebook page, is that, I don't know, is that furthering the cause at all, whatever the cause is? I mean, I don't know.
You're pro cause? Is that what you're saying? You support the cause?
I don't even know what I'm saying. There's something that's been bugging me about this, and I'm not sure what it is. But if someone can define what it is and then make it dial back a little bit, that'd be cool. What about you, John? What do you want to go away?
What I want to go, let me think.
If you want a minute to think about it, John.
Yeah, let me marinate and ruminate. Go ahead.
The thing that bothers me, now I'm older and, you know, I haven't been real shy about discussing my age, but I'm 44. The thing I would like to see change a bit is the thing that bothers me at my age every year. I wonder if A, I still belong in punk rock, and B, if I still want to do it, or if I still want to be an active participant, because the politics of it have become so uniform. There's literally no room for dissent. It's just all mainstream punk rock shares a certain political view and a certain ideas about the way things should be. And if you dare step out of line, you literally will get blackballed, and you know, you'll be accused of being all sort of horrible things. I wish that there would be a little more ability to be an individual within what's supposed to be a very rebellious movement, but what has become a very, very conformist movement at the national level. And that's why I still love to exist at the local level, where I can still do good and there's lots of great stuff going on. But I got to tell you, I don't feel much of a kinship with the younger, broader punk community. I just don't feel like I belong in it at all. Like I hear them talk sometimes, and I just shake my head and go, "Wow, that's just crazy talk." But
well, do you think that is particularly a punk rock thing, or is that like a people on the internet thing? Because I've like become like very careful about like not bothering to get into like certain topics, even political topics that I would assume people would agree with me on by and large. And it's only just because I don't want to derail my whole day by having the one guy that's going to decide to make it their, you know, crusade to try to convince me that my opinion is stupid to jump in on it. So
I think there's a lot of truth to that,
like,
because yeah, it really is a poor use of time. And like, you know, hopefully somewhere along the line, somebody gave you the words of wisdom to never argue with a fool. And I've already spent too many of my years arguing with fools, and I generally just won't do it anymore. And people are so quick to jump to conclusions. Nobody's got an open mind. Everybody's already made up their mind about things. And I don't think anybody's hardly right about anything. And it's just, and the punk rock, it just bothers me so much, the level of conformity of thought within punk rock circles. Like I said, it makes me question every year. I question whether or not there's a place for me. And I guess I've decided in 2018 there is. So here I am.
Tom, you're wrong. And you can't change my mind otherwise. No, I actually agree pretty much everything Tom says, more or less. With me, I'm going to be more introspective. In punk rock-wise, my 2017 was kind of a landmark year, man. I threw two shows. Both were, one was – one, Adam, what you I think you'll agree, was successful beyond our dreams. The other was very successful. I put out, I think, 6 releases. And I was very pleased with how they all came out. I did a couple of my, what I would say, very best interviews I've ever done. I'm very proud of my Jello interview. So my 2017 punk year was very good. And I want to complain about punk, but I can't, because when I go to punk shows, it's what I want it to be. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not 100% what I want it to be, but you know, it's what I would call within not only the acceptable area of what I think punk should be, but even, you know, the very good area of what punk should be. When I go to shows, I have a good time. I think it's interesting art. I think it's moving in the right direction. I think the people there are generally moving in the right direction. But somehow I'm still annoyed by punk, and I realize it's not punk that's annoying me. It's creeps on the internet. You know what I mean? So what I need to do in 2018 is, first of all, like Adam, what you were there, 175 people told us we did a good job at the summer soiree. More, actually, and the bands, too. So 200 people patted us on the back. Literally, 200 people were, well, people were like, oh, that was awesome. That was awesome.
But 50 people on the internet were mad because none of the proceeds from that went to charity.
Well, the charity was me losing about $200, which I was happy to do. But so why I really need to, why am I letting seven ankle biters even take a second of my day? Like, once they don't deserve that. Why am I letting them do that? I don't know. I it must be self-conscious, or must I must think poorly of myself somehow. Why, like if a 4-year-old pointed at me from across the street and said, "You're smelling," like, I would think that was funny, you know. So why does the internet equivalent of that, like, it doesn't bother me. Actually, it doesn't bother me. It only bothers me when I sign on to something that I'm proud of or something I put effort into, and I see some jackass be like, "This is stupid." You know what I mean? Like that shouldn't bother me at all. Like, this person has done nothing. This person hasn't ever done anything. Why am I letting this person even get 1 second of my day? I don't know. I need to work on that. The other thing I need to work on is Keith Morris, down with Punk News. Jack Terrycloth, down with Punk News. Del Biafra, down with Punk News. Jesse Michaels, down with Punk News. All these titans are down with Punk News. There are three bands, three acts that I like that blew us off a couple of years, that we used to be super pals with and blew us off, and since then have consistently blown us off, even after I've made an attempt to reconnect and you know, get back on. Not, it's not that we're on unfriendly terms. There's no terms. Get back on positive terms. And consistently, those three people have just not acknowledged. Why is that bothering? Like, I need to not let that bother me. It's like if I have to pick between Keith Morris and Act XYZ, Keith Morris by a landslide. If I have to pick between Jesse Michaels and Act XYZ, Jesse Michaels by a landslide. Jello by a landslide. So we're getting all... We've got positive interactions and interesting pieces with all my top 10 picks, every single one. Why am I letting picks 27 through 30 bother me? I don't know why. I need to not let that happen. I don't know why. No one gets 100%. You know what I mean?
It's human nature, I think, to be bothered by that stuff. As long as you don't let it get to you to an unnatural level where it's having a negative effect on you, you know, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, I get that, dude. You know, there's so much good stuff, John. You got to accentuate the positive.
That's exactly it. Keith Morris is down with us. I'm over the moon. So who cares about number 27? You know what I mean? Go ahead, Adam.
I have a very punk rock answer to this and a very not punk rock answer to this.
Destroy your heroes.
Well, no, actually, but that's a good one. The non-punk rock answer to this, and this is, oh, and I'm so sorry for this. This is basically straight out of out of Dale Carnegie's, like, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Is that
you love that guy, Adam? You love that
I just,
guy.
Anyways, one of the tenets that he talks about in there is basically like the one thing that anyone wants in the world more than anything is recognition. Is you want people to appreciate what you've done or what you're doing or respond in a positive way to what's going on. And that's, to a degree, that's why social media works, and that's why it's addictive. Like, it's the same thing that's underlying that. Like, I'm super conscious of this myself, because I feel like I'm setting up situations to feed that impulse, and I know that I do it, and I'm just okay with it. So like for example, and this is like every week when I do my newsletter thing, I'll go and I'll post the newsletter and I'll make sure I post it to Facebook and Twitter and tag any of the bands that I happen to mention in there. And then I just wait. And then anytime my phone dings or buzzes because it's like, oh, this band that you mentioned, you know, liked the fact that you mentioned them. There's this little dopamine hit that, you know, that goes off in my head where I'm just like, hey, look at that. Right. And I think, and that's the same reason people, you know, check their Instagram to see what their likes are or their faves or whatever the fuck it's called on Instagram. Like, it's the same type of thing. People like look for retweets and everything. And I think it's the same thing that drives most of our impulses, is that we just ultimately kind of want people to like us and like what we do. And when they don't, or when they don't respond or anything like that, it makes you crazy. And I mean, in my experience, I'm almost driven more crazy by when someone just doesn't respond. Like if I'm trying to contact a band or something like that, and they're going to get back to me and be like, you know what, I'm not into it. It's not going to work for me or whatever. Right. Then okay. No problem. But if I'm trying to talk to someone and they just ignore me constantly, like that almost makes it worse, because then you're thinking like, holy fuck, like what did I do? Right. Why won't this band talk to me? And for all you know, they're just not checking their email or something. Right. So yeah, like that, the really non-punk rock answer to that is this sort of like a core human drive that you get like recognition. The punk rock answer to that is I keep thinking about whenever I do anything like in life, the last couple lines to Minor Threat's In My Eyes. And just I think about it all the time. Just, you know, you think that I make no difference. At least I'm fucking trying. What the fuck have you done? Right. Like just that just resonates.
Well, that's the truth, right? Baby.
And
that does resonate.
Yeah, man. I agree with that. That's a mantra.
Like,
definitely.
It's totally a mantra. Right. And it always comes, it pops into my head. Like whenever I think like, you know, what I'm doing, like, is me writing this piece, is me trying to do this interview, is me trying to do anything, is me writing this review or whatever, like, does this matter to anyone? Like, should I be doing anything else right now? And then it, you know, it'll kind of pop in like, hey, I'm trying, right? At least I'm trying. So yeah, that's my more punk rock answer to that, is to quote Minor Threat. So
honestly, Adam, I think that should be the title of the episode. I mean, we should do something silly. I think maybe it should be At Least I'm Trying. Boy, are we trying at Punk News.
I already forgot what the other thing was you wanted to do anyway.
It was like heavy sock action or something like that. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. All right, boys, it's 10:22. Let's get rocking. Following up on that, why do we do this? Andrew WK's got the answer for us. The reason we do this is music is worth living for. That's the name of his new single. He's got a brand new album coming out called You Are Not Alone. This is like his first rock single in about 10 years. I'll just go briefly. This is Andrew WK doing what Andrew WK does, positivity, but not blind positivity. I would say realistic positivity, if you will, true PMA. I dug it. I don't know if it was a complete, you know, I can't like changing my life type song, but I dug this track. And by all accounts, this track will be signifies that Andrew WK's new album will be what I want it to be. I dig Andrew WK. He is awesome live.
Yeah,
he is awesome live, but he's one of those guys to me. I mean, like the song, you're right, John. It's Andrew WK doing Andrew WK. He's one of those guys where I think I like him more than I like his music. The music is fine, but I really like him. It was cool, but it's not really my thing.
I haven't heard an Andrew WK record since The Wolf. So my experience with him primarily is the first two records where he was just doing this like this incredibly overdriven posy rock or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Right. So the fact that this is a return to form to that era is great, because that's what I want. And that's how that's my primary touchstone for Andrew WK. Anyways, this song was fine. I would have maybe liked it if it was just like a little bit faster.
Right?
Just going off of the fact that like some of his stuff is just bonkers, as
a little more thrashing,
right? But if there's stuff on the record like that, then this may totally work as it is in that context. So I don't want to jump to too much of a conclusion. So yeah, I'm cool. Can we talk about the cover art to this and how amazing it is?
Yeah, you know who it's by, don't you?
I don't. Who's it by?
It's by Boris Vallée, who was a very famous painter and famous bodybuilder. He's especially famous for doing Conan the Barbarian comic book covers, but other covers too. And you can tell just by looking at it. Let's talk about the cover. I love the detail of the cover. I like how in the cover, there's that person in that back window looking at him. So he's not the only person in the frame. It's like, why is this person back there looking at him? And also it's orange where everything else is basically green, which I think is interesting. He's looking at a dragon, but the dragon is almost hidden away, fading in the bottom right-hand corner. I sort of wish the dragon was as big as Andrew WK, because it's like it would seem more dramatic to me. It almost seems like the dragon is an afterthought, and that just seems a little strange for a dragon to be an afterthought, if you will. Although it's a good painting in the context that it really got me to think. The dragon on the one side, the person in the house on the other side. It's really getting me to analyze this picture, you know?
I mean, it throws back to the Oh, which video would it have been? Like the She Is Beautiful video, I think, where he's just sort of like in a domestic setting with like a 60-foot long mic cable just running around. So like, it almost feels like that could extend into this because he's standing on the street and the mic is presumably back in the house where the video was shot or whatever. But I don't know. I like it. I think it's a striking picture. I like the fact that the dragon that he's out there to face is just sort of like subtle and in this suburban
sort of coiled up like a serpent.
I wonder if it's a St. George and the Dragon homage, because famously in medieval art, when they would do St. George and the Dragon, they would draw the dragon like really tiny for some reason. Like in modern art, they make the dragon like the size of like 9 houses. But in medieval art, the size of the dragon was like a garter snake. I think there's a reason they do that, but I don't remember off the top of my head. I wonder if this is an homage to that.
I mean, it may be given the artist and that they're not, you know, that they're come from like this like fantasy tradition, right? But in any case, it's cool. I like the cover art to this a lot. It's kind of weird talking about the artwork to something on a podcast because our listeners are like, well, I can't see this fucking
Well, they can go look at it. They yeah, got Google.
Stop the podcast. Rewind it. Go look up this art. Anyways, that yeah. So I'm excited about this. I'm more than I have been for an Andrew WK thing in a while. And I don't think like he ever fell off my radar so much as that I just assumed that the things that he was off doing weren't for me. Like when he was doing like, what did he do? Like yeah, video game covers or something?
They're not for you. He did one album of improvisational piano music and two albums of cover of Japanese only anime TV programs.
So, yeah. I mean, hey, if that's your bag, that's cool, but that's.
It sounds like the next Narmer Records release, John.
I would release anything by Andrew WK.
Oh, of course. I'm just saying, like random bands doing like cartoon themes.
That's the beauty of Narmer Records. My risk in putting out a release is exactly $115. So if it's wacky, let's do it. You know what I mean? Listen, speaking of striking cover art, we'll just go through this kind of quickly. The Whitney Public Library in Las Vegas recently set up a display, and in the display, they converted Bomb Music Industries to Live or Die in Long Island to say Whitney Library music book, and they had a whole bunch of music books around. So basically, they took that famous Bomb Music Industry album and made it into a library display, which is very interesting. The person that did that is Stephen M., who runs Punks in Vegas, the website, and he's not a Punk News contributor, but he's a friend of Punk News. I thought this was interesting and fun. Staffer Sean was mad. He was questioning its effectiveness, and I'm like, dude, it's just fun. What does it say that punk rock, the outside antagonistic, anti-normal force, has now been adopted and incorporated into a state institution by a person that runs a punk website? Is punk now the mainstream? That's the question here.
It really is. It's not dangerous anymore. That's what it means. At least the modern stuff isn't. That's it, man. I'm sorry, Bomb. The music industry is not dangerous. It's not dangerous. It's mainstream.
I wouldn't argue that it's dangerous. I wouldn't argue that it's mainstream either. I mean, like, put this in the context here, right? Like, someone that works in a library made a display in a library that's based on cover art that we recognize, but to the general public, it's just a display that has a guitar on it, right? Like, it's
and you know, he's a punk rock guy, but he also knows that he can't put like, you know, exploited fuck the system. You know,
in a children's library.
You know what I mean? Well, it's like acceptable in that context.
Well, see, what Steven's doing here is what I think a lot of us do in our day to day, which is take the thing that we're obsessed about and slot it into the mundanity of what you're doing to no one's particular appreciation except for your own. So, I mean, I do this in my little way, which is that, like, if you're, you know, if I'm writing code and I have to write a test for my code and I have to create test users to go into the test to make sure it works, inevitably the test users in all my code are the Ramones, right? And that amuses me. But no one else gives a shit, right? Not anyone else in my office, especially not anyone else in the real world. This might just be an extension of that where, you know, someone at the library was like, make some art for the sign for the music book section. And then he was like, oh, I'm going to base it on this thing. And then the other people in the library were like, looks good. I like the color blue. But they didn't, you know, pick up at all the context. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
But it's whimsical, and he enjoyed it. It made his work life a little more fun. It's cool.
That's how she works.
I just don't know why Stafford, Sean, and Greg were like attacking this. They're like, I dispute this effectiveness of this display. It's like, bro, come on. Listen, speaking of things being effective, here's a guy that was very effective at his job. There's a band called the Ataris. They're still around. They had a bassist named Michael Davenport. He was in the band from 1998 till 2005. Tom and Adam, have you heard anything from Michael Davenport in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, he's by far the most successful member of that band.
Well, he is, and here's why. It turns out in late December, Davenport was arrested for a $27 million phone scam. And here's how the scam worked. Is he and a partner named,
Cynthia Rawlinson.
Cynthia Rawlinson. They would go on Craigslist and put up an ad that said, get information on pre-foreclosure houses. The idea is people could... Well, that's what the ad said. And so people would call the telephone number up and then they would say, okay, pay us $200 and we will give you information on pre-foreclosure houses that are selling at below market value so you can buy that house and make money on the house. So people would send in the $200 and they would either not send any info or send up info they completely made up that didn't make any sense. And then when people would try to request a refund, they would say, okay, you have to send us complete a form, wait 90 days, and here's the kicker, provide us with 5 copies of letters from other property owners proving the homes were not in fact correctly listed, which seemed like an impossible task to me. So they were doing this for about 10 years, and prosecutors claim they made $27 million off of this. I don't know, you know, prosecutors will often, you know, inflate what someone really made in a criminal enterprise just to give them some negotiation leverage and also to make it look like they caught a bigger fish than they actually did. That being said, he was arrested at Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport, and he had $104,000 on his person and $850,000 in his personal bank account with funds possibly in other places. So
he was carrying one of those black bags with a white dollar sign on it.
Apparently, so listen, boys. This is a scam. And honestly,
I mean, at $200 a pop, $27 million.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work. You can go to work.
The math on that is that now let's assume that the $27 million is that's how much they made from scams, and not that's how much they made from like investing the scam money. So if you just want to take it and say it's straight, that means they would have had to have scammed 135,000 people to make this happen. Specifically, 135,678 people.
Wow.
That's a lot of fraud to run. Especially, I mean, that's not just a lot of fraud to run. That's a lot of fraud to run in a fairly like labor-intensive way, right? Because they were emailing things back and forth with the people that they were defrauding. So unless they had set up a fucking bot or something to automate through that, then there's labor that, you know, that you are putting in to work each of those marks. And 136,000 of them, that's a lot of time. Like it's going to be pretty hard to plead like, you know, oh, it was a moment of weakness, or it was a, you know, oh, we didn't realize the implications of what we were doing. Like, you're not going to be able to plead a lot of ignorance if you've done this 136,000 times. Holy fuck. So the Atari, this is an interesting story because the Ataris were a reasonably big band from the
pop. This is literally the most interesting Atari story in a decade.
Standpoint, right? And so what? Hold on here. Let's check something out. What time did he leave the band, John? What year?
2005. And he started his fraud scheme almost immediately afterwards.
So
he's been doing it for like 10 years. He did like 10 years.
Well, okay. So he left the.
There you go, Adam.
So he left the band in 2005. So he left the band a couple years after the release of that band's major hit. So any it's not, we're not talking about someone that, like, every once in a while you hear a story about like someone from a band that does something crazy, but then it turns out that, like, oh no, that's not, like, it's not the lead guitarist or anything like that. It's, you know, a guy that was like the one-time drummer for a show in 1987, right? But no, this dude was in this band. So the Atari's biggest record, as far as I'm would assume, would have been their fourth full-length So Long Astoria, which came out in March of 2003. So that was the record that had their cover of Don Henley's Boys of Summer on there, which was their biggest radio hit, and you still hear on the radio today. So if there was money to be made out of the Ataris, you would imagine that, you know, that he was there at the time when it was the most lucrative. Now, as I say that, I'm going to cut myself off here because I am looking at the actual credits for that album right now. And Chris Rowe, the lead from the Ataris, he recorded So Long Astoria entirely himself. Ooh. So if you look at so Mike Davenport is listed as the bass player, but there's a little asterisk next to his name where it says did not play on the album, right? So
no royalties.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the royalties kind of break down in this kind of situation where you're in the band but you weren't actually on the recording. So okay, maybe he made,
if you didn't write and you didn't record, you get nothing. You get for that recording.
So, all right, so I guess he's not making. All right, so I'm going to walk all that back. He wasn't making money off that recording, but he was still in that band at the point of which would have been the height of their popularity, which meant that, you know, again, this, he was, you would assume that he was a reasonably important member of this band.
Well, why did he record the whole album by himself when he had a full band? That is kind of strange, isn't it?
You never know the situation it's these kind people of a are in.
Screw right? you.
He thought something might be up, so he didn't want to get.
Well, he didn't just exclude the bass player. Like he played, you know,
no, everything else, yeah. No, it's just strange.
Right? So
usually you make your first album without a band, then you put your band together, you know, the kind of Foo Fighters formula, if you would, but no.
What I will say is I'm amazed at the relative, like, most scams are like pretty clever. There's nothing that clever about the scam. No. He just said, we'll lie and just take money from people. What also surprises me is that it took 10 years to get caught. I mean, I guess who's really going to call off the cops over $200? But as the evidence shows, at least one person over 10 years. The third thing is he was making so much money. The sick thing is he could have done this legitimately. You know what I mean? Like, if he's making $2.7 million a year, he could take $700,000 and make a legitimate product out of that. You know what I mean? So he's a
bass player, John.
Enough said.
Enough said.
This is so weird though, because okay, like, let's, so at the time of his arrest, he had $104,000 on his person. So was he like, he cheesing it? Like, was he like making a break for it when he was arrested? Like, he knew the heat was coming.
Yeah,
like,
right? Yeah,
because why else would you have that much money on you?
Have you eaten at any of those airport restaurant bars? Oh my gosh, they're so expensive.
I imagine I've seen the Goodfellas where Ray Liotta is like high on cocaine. He's like watching the helicopters behind him as he's driving around. So let's play another tune. I'm going to tell a quick story. Well, listen, anybody got any final words of this crazy, crazy story? I mean, this is one for the books.
I guess there goes the classic lineup reunion.
You know what? This story makes me feel good because here's why this makes me feel good. A, none of the victims were all that hard done by, right? We talk about a lot of crime on this podcast, right? any given victim on this was out $200, and there were people that were looking to buy property in the first place. So you assume that them being out $200 didn't like put them into dire financial straits, right? So I don't have to feel bad for any victims here. And for God's sakes, it's nice to have a crime story where there wasn't, I don't like
wasn't
like,
sexual,
wasn't, yeah, or wasn't like, wasn't a fucking violent rape or anything else that everyone else that is in the fucking punk scene seems to be committing. Like, this is some good old fraud. And I'm
wacky schemes. They're hilarious. Wacky schemes are always funny.
135,000 victims.
Man, $27 million. Wow. Speaking of, I don't know how we just got to jump to the next. I'm going to tell a quick story. There's no way to. That's the ultimate crescendo. $27 million scam. I don't know how we walk back from that. So
I said, good for him.
This past Saturday, I saw KRS-One, the famous MC. I saw him 2 years – when I lived in the Bay Area, I would see him like 4 times a year in club shows, and it was some of the best shows I ever saw. Check out Dom Dobby's Three Gigs podcast where I talk about this for an hour, seeing KRS-One. However, I saw KRS-One for the first time in 2 years this past Saturday, and it was the first club show I've seen him at in about 4 years. And first, like KRS-One shows are – they're so – like – they're not, it's the ultimate hip hop because they're not planned. It's so live, anything can happen. Like Public Enemy is awesome live, but it's like James Brown, and every single line, every single footstep is orchestrated. It's all planned out. KRS-One is the exact opposite. It's mania, absolute mania. So I saw him at the Stanhope House, which is this weird place in the middle of Nowheresville, New Jersey. I mean, it is in the middle of nowhere. And so I went and I saw him. And so they had like 6 opening acts, which was brutal. Except the last act was kind of cool. He was called the Garden State Great. But before him, I'm just going to say it. Before him was like 5 groups of white rappers. And unless you're the Beastie Boys or Eminem, you probably shouldn't rap if you're white. I'm sorry. It's just the truth. Like they were either all the ultimate gangsta or they were like super uber conscious, like hip hop saved my life. You know, now I live by the words of hip hop. You know, it's like, all right, I get it. You like hip hop, you know. Anyways, so KRS-One comes out. Is that racist for me to say that? Can I get in trouble for saying that?
You get in trouble for saying everything, John. Keep going.
Yeah, it's true, though. I mean, listen.
There'll be some fake outrage.
If you're a white rapper, I'm not saying you shouldn't rap, but I'm saying you should think long and hard about it first. And if your angle is uber gangster, you might want to reconsider. Or if your angle is ultra conscious rapper, you might want to reconsider that too. So anyways, the Garden State Great performed. He was kind of cool. He was cool. And then the DJ was same DJ all night, was one of the weirdest looking guys I've ever seen. Like, you guys know the cover of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with like Johnny Depp, but it's like all like distorted.
Yeah, like they're melting. Yeah.
He looked like that. He had this crazy Cheshire Cat smile on his face the whole night. He had these glasses on. He had like an afro, except for it was like an incomplete afro. Like parts of his hair were sticking out like an afro, but other parts weren't. He was a weird looking guy. He was a competent DJ. So anyway, he throws on this banging beat. Like, it is banging. And the Stanhope House is actually an old mansion. And you don't come in the front door. You come in like the carriage house door. So the front door is where the acts come in. And you can see like the silhouette of KRS-One outside because he wears a very distinctive hat. And he's a gigantic human being. He's like 6'6". He's gigantic. So you see this shadow outside and this badass beat. It's so cool. The door swings open. He rushes out. He jumps on the stage. And behind him are like 10 people. They run up and jump on the stage behind him. But the funny thing is, he's so huge, he looks like he's normal size. And the guys behind him who are normal size look like mini guys because he's so gigantic. And it was so weird because like they're kind of like groove. They're not like dancing, but they're like grooving. And so it looked like a Super Nintendo boss battle. Like there's this one gigantic guy up front and like these 10 guys behind him moving in like unison, you know. And he starts like just freestyling off the top. And it is so awesome. And he keeps going, turn it up, turn it up. It was so – the room was shaking. It was so, like punk shows get loud. This might have been one of the loudest shows I've – and it was a small – it was so loud. The bass – I think part of it because hip-hop has a lot of bass. So the bass is like shaking the whole room. KRS-One is freestyling. Then he breaks into his first song, which I think was South Bronx. All of a sudden, the 10 guys behind him start breakdancing simultaneously. This one guy jumps up into a handstand and starts kicking his legs back and forth like a helicopter. It was crazy. Then another guy... One guy lifts up another guy on top of his head, starts spinning around, and then the guy on the bottom stops, and the guy on the top keeps spinning around on top of the guy's head. Like I know, like they do that on the Howie Mandel Dance Club show or whatever, but it's one thing to see that on TV. It's another thing to see that in real life. Like, it was insane. It was insane. So the show was like KRS-One like freestyle for like 70% of the show. It was crazy, crazy, crazy. After the shows, sometimes he like runs out into the crowd and just starts signing autographs, and sometimes he just like leaves. And so I said, you know what, I'm not a huge guy on autographs, but you know, it's kind of cool to get something signed. And so I said, well, I could get Edutainment signed, which is probably one of his biggest albums. But I also have this obscure 12-inch single by Mikey Dread. Adam, who's Mikey Dread?
Oh man, Mikey Dread, Mikey Dread, who appeared on Sandinista, who produced The Clash at one point, right?
He did. He produced side six of Sandinista. He produced Bank Robber and a couple other Clash cuts. Mikey Dread is a famous reggae artist. KRS-One in 1989 produced a Mikey Dread track. It's called Source of Your Divorce. And I said to myself, when he signed stuff, people always hand him like the big hit record, like Criminal Minded, Edutainment, Return of the Boom Bap, I Got Next. And he, what he does is like people hand them to him, and he like always holds up the like it's not an organized thing. Like people are rushing the stage, people are screaming, people are yelling, and he's so big that he's like a head above everybody else, you know. And so people hand him like Criminal Minded, and he'll hold up and says, Who's got this? And then he signs it and he gives it back to the person. And then someone will give him like Return of the Boom Bap, like, this is from back in the day. You know, if you have this, you're a real hip hop head. And he signs it and he hands it back to the person, you know? And so I said, well, I could have him sign Edutainment, but my copy of Edutainment is like mint. And I kind of don't want to get a sloppy signature on it, but I'm like, what if I hand him Source of Your Divorce? And I'm thinking it might piss him off because, A, he might not recognize it because it's a fairly forgotten single, or he might think I'm just handing him someone else's record just to be a jackass. Or he might think or he might not even recognize it because even though he produced the song, maybe he's never seen the cover of the record, you know. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to risk it just to be funny and like just to let him know that I'm down like with reggae because he loves reggae. I'm like, if he gets pissed off, I'll just like run away and leave my 2 hour single behind, you know. But if he's down, then I'll be cool. You know what I mean? So he's signing, he jumps out, he's signing, he's getting ready to leave. And I hand it to him and he doesn't look at it because, you know, he's signing something else. He takes it and he looks at it. And for a second, you can tell he's like, what the hell is this? Like for a second, he's like pissed off. He's like, what is this? This is not one of my records. Then all of a sudden his eyes pop open and his jaw drops and he realizes what it is. It's this forgotten 12-inch reggae single that he loves that no one else appreciated when it came out, but that I had. Then he looks over at me because I think he thought it was someone that maybe knows him, but I don't really know him. And it's so loud you can't say anything to him. So I just give him like the thumbs up, and I give you like this dumb smile on my face. And then he gives me the thumbs up and then he signs it and gives it back to me. And then he like leaves.
The thumbs up is like it is. We make fun of it actually all the time around here because my dear brother-in-law, anytime someone takes a fucking picture of him, it's like thumbs up because he's an awkward guy and he doesn't know what to do, right? And it's just like anytime you see the fucking thumbs up, it's always like there's no one that's ever ironic, doing it with right? dignity.
It's got to be ironic. If you're not doing it ironically, yeah, it's not good.
But anyway, honestly, I don't know why, and I don't get starstruck or anything, but I was thrilled that he recognized I appreciated his more obscure work and reggae and his love of reggae and the connection. You know, I for a brief moment, I had that for about 8 seconds, I had that connection with KRS-One, and he knew that I knew more than everyone else there, and that was a real thrill for me. So we're going to play that track. This is Mikey Dread doing Source of Your Divorce. Adam White, bring us back in.
On whom you can always depend. I wanna be your friend. promises I have made. I just want to be your friend, on whom you can always depend. I want to be your friend from now on to the end. I don't want to be the source of your divorce. I don't want to be the cause for you to break your marriage laws. I just want to be the dread, the one who put righteousness.
That was Mikey Dredd playing Source of
Produced by KRS-One.
So we're back. We're going to talk about a few stories before we wrap up here, because we've maybe been recording for a little bit. We'll do two quick ones here, and then we'll do a sad one, and then we'll get out. So the first one here, and I believe that there is a positive resolution to this one since when we posted the original story. You know, don't worry too much, and if everyone, but Stacey D of Bad Cop, she was set to head out for some live performances on an acoustic tour with Off With Their Heads, Ryan Young, and Seth Anderson. They were going to all go out on tour together, and she had to cancel her performances because of sort of like unexpected health complications that cropped up that basically landed her in the ER with a diagnosis of sepsis. So this was like, was it like a day, 2 days before the tour was set to kick off?
It was the night before the tour.
Yeah. So, Ryan Young posted this to Facebook. He said, quick story, Stacey was getting ready for tour. She had been in pain for quite a while, but thought it would subside by the time we left for the trip. The night before we were scheduled to take off, she was in excruciating pain, so much so that she had to be rushed to the emergency room. They informed her that she had sepsis. I don't know the details, but it's not good. They may have to operate, but nothing is known yet. The one thing that we do know is Stacey is going to need a little financial help. So I made these shirts for her tour with me, but along with Stacey, the shirts won't be joining us. So pick one up to help her out. All the money is going to be directed to her. And you can find links to actually buy these shirts and everything from Anxious and Angry, or go to Anxious and Angry, and they're probably still for sale. Now, I believe it's been updated since when we posted that story originally that she's in recovery. She's doing okay. So she's past the scary zone there. But she is probably still in need of covering those medical bills. So if you're a... You want to support Stacey D from Bad Cop, head over to Anxious and Angry and buy one of her tour shirts there, because, you know, healthcare costs money in some places. I don't know. Is there any follow-up on this? Anything you guys want to chat about, or just,
I believe it was like very scary for a while for that day. People seemed like really worried for her, but it seems like she's getting better, because Bad Cop already has a March tour planned, you know, although I don't know if she's going to be joining them, but you know, it seemed like she's recovering. We talked about this briefly before. Is this something we should cover? And also, we've got the difficult choice of, should we include a link to the charity or benefit or whatever for Stacey D? And Punk News' general policies, we never post links to, you know, band, you know, help us with our band, help us with our robbery. The reason being, A, we're not a catalog. B, we don't want to be responsible if it turns out like that person is like a really bad person. C, where do you draw the line? Because there's constantly people like doing fundraisers for bands and stuff, and we don't want to be like the fundraiser central, you know?
I think if you're in the hospital with a life-threatening situation, then you get a pass.
Really?
Sure. I mean, I'm gonna make that sound way colder because I'm going to say, if you're in the hospital in a bad situation and you're from a notable band that people are going to want to read about on Punk News, then we'll post that. I mean, for the same reasons that you just said, like, we can't post about everything. So if, you know, some guy that plays in a local band in your area that no one's heard of is having a fundraiser because he stuck his foot in the lawnmower, then, you know, we probably can't post all of those just because I would assume that there's a lot of them and it at some point would not be, I think, as effective as you think it would be. But, you know, in this case, we're talking about a band that, you know, is regularly talked about otherwise on the site. So, you know, that puts them into the category where you could talk about this. That's what I say.
But how about a link to a purchase? How about a link to the actual purchase or benefit or whatever?
I mean, again, it's within the context of this, it makes sense, right? Because it's part of the story, right? Like it's relevant to what's going on here, and it would seem strange for us to go and to like mention it and then just be like, go Google it, right? But you know,
we didn't put a link. See, that's my argument is if people want to find it, they can Google it. So we never need to put links.
I think about that sometimes because every once in a while you see. You'll see news that's related to a crowdfunding campaign, and those will show up in actual news sites, right? So you know you'll hear something will happen to someone in politics, and there'll be people that are on one side or the other of an issue that are going to go and try to like raise money on like GoFundMe or something like that to help them out. And it's maybe like news that that's happening. But then I think that like the question in those issues, in those cases are like, well, does, if you're the Washington Post or you're, you know, the LA Times or something like that, do you post a link to the GoFundMe page? Like, is that a tactic endorsement of it because you're giving people easy access to go there? And where do you draw that line? And I think that in that case, we're talking about politics and things like that. It's maybe a little bit more dicey than us where we're talking about like people that are in bands that we have decided we'd like enough to talk about anyways. So, you know, I think it's more of an academic issue than a real issue in this case, John.
Fair enough. Speaking of academic issues, here is an academic issue. Behemoth, which is a death metal band from Poland, they've been charged, that is legally criminally charged, with insulting the Polish national emblem. They sold some t-shirts and some other things that featured kind of like an eagle, like with an inverted cross and some red, and he had some red eyes. And Poland said, that's not cool with us. We're going to charge you with insulting the Polish national emblem. The band, if found guilty, the band will have to pay a fine and possibly, but not likely, a short stint in the clink. The band has pled not guilty. And Nurgle, the singer, said, well, this is the first thing that hit me after coming back from a relaxing and sunny holiday trip. Me and two other dudes are accused of profaning Polish emblem. What a bummer. Please, PLS-driven Poland is trying its best to nail my ass down as an example, I guess. But first thing is, it is not the Polish emblem. Second, let's leave those arguments for the court case, which is to begin shortly. Is there limits to their obscurity and blindness? Bring it on. So I will say that kudos to Nurgle for standing up for himself and, you know, fighting for freedom of speech. This was supposed to just cause it's an interesting story to let everyone know that everywhere is not America, but also America kind of isn't America now because a certain person in an official power is trying to clamp down on speech and on what people can say about the president and also what people can illustrate with regards to certain images. That's what I'm saying.
Luckily, we have a high court that won't allow that to happen.
I hope
but,
so.
But I'll tell you, man, Polish death metal bands are having a bad freaking time lately. You know what I'm saying? We had the decapitated story that's been ongoing. Another Polish.
Well, the decapitated band thing, maybe they shouldn't be getting up to the hijinks they're getting up to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This seems crazy to us, where you can literally take an American flag and redesign it with, you know, skulls or upside down crosses or whatever you want to do. But, you know,
old punker, long time punk news reader had a hilarious comment. He said, "All this shirt needs is the Affliction logo across the top," which is really true. I mean, it's a pretty cheesy looking shirt, honestly.
I don't know if Old Punker listens to the podcast or not, but if you're listening, Old Punker, man, like, shout out to you. You keep the positivity going on the comment section.
This sounds like one of those laws that is historically on the books, but no one would enforce. Like, you know, every once in a while, you'll hear one of those.
Unless you get somebody who has a hard on for some reason.
But you'll hear something like, oh, did you know, like, it's illegal to keep a goat in your garage in Minneapolis or something like that, right? Like, something that, like, for whatever reason, ended up on the books through some weird quirk of history, and just no one's bothered to rescind the law because there's better things to do.
I got to interrupt you, Adam. You know, there's another weird law. You won't believe this. It's illegal to scam people out of $27 million with a fake real estate investment telephone scam.
No shit.
Who would have thought?
I just looked it up, Adam. It's actually illegal not to have a goat in your garage in Minnesota, but I don't think they enforce it much.
So this would almost seem like one of those types of laws, like no one's gonna bother enforcing it because everyone has better things to do. But I don't know what the vibe is in Eastern Europe or anything, so clearly that's not the case.
What is interesting about this is that, you know, anti-Christianity is still seen as a threat in parts of Eastern Europe, where in America, that's like so 1980, like no one even gives a shit. America is actually seeing a reaction to that, in that not with the Christian, but with other religions. If you say anything bad about other religions, people say you're a bigot, you know, which is kind of the opposite. Or is it the same? I can't figure it out now.
I want to look at this and say that my response would be to put on some art exhibit that is like 90 times as profane as this, sort of as a fuck you to the law. Like, if you're going to charge me with this, then like, let's go all out. But I say that from the privileged position of the fact that, you know, I could probably go like take a shit on a Canadian flag in my front lawn and no one would care. So I don't know if I'd want to necessarily tempt fate if I was a citizen of Poland and dealing with that.
I just imagine like an old lady walking down the street. Young man, what are you doing in your front yard? Listen, we had our laughs, we had our yucks, but we got to close out with a sad story. Although maybe it's not that sad of a story, because it is a legendary legacy. The last member of the original Motorhead band has passed.
The classic
Motorhead band has passed away. Fast Eddie Clark passed away about a week ago. He died at the age of 67. They didn't really state why he passed away, but he was the last member that was on the Ace of Spades album and a Bomber and all the classic Motorhead albums. On Facebook, what was going around was like, you saw it with the Ramones too. It was the Ace of Spades album cover, except for with all three members removed, and it was just the desert. So Tom Trauma, you are a Motorhead maniac. What does this mean to you? What should we do?
You know, I never really put it in the context until I saw that going around, that he was the last of the classic trio. Yeah, that made Motorhead, Overkill, Bomber, Iron Fist, Ace of Spades. I mean, an incredibly productive period. It's the classic lineup, not the longest lasting lineup. The longest lasting lineup was actually the last lineup, which was together for more than 15 years. But it was... it's a bummer. I don't know that I had any specific affinity for, you know, Fast Eddie Clark, but when Motorhead was done, he did a band called Fastway with Dave King, which was like a cock rock band that I had their first two albums.
Wait, but is that the band with the guy that went on the Flogging Molly?
Yes, Dave King from Flogging Molly. He was Irish born, moved out to L.A. and sang for a cock rock band. And they did the soundtrack for a really great B-grade horror movie called Trick or Treat. But anyway, I am a big Motorhead fan. I never saw that era. I was just reading up on a little bit. He left the band in 82 or 83. It's a bummer. End of an era. You want me to play a song, or you guys want to talk about
play a jam, Tom?
Man, do it.
Okay. So I'm going to try to avoid the worst cliched songs, and I'm going to play Iron Fist, which is the title track from the last album that he played on, that Fast Eddie played on, and he also produced it. And it's really not necessarily considered one of their greatest albums from that era, but the title track is definitely a classic. So this is Motorhead playing Iron Fist.
That was Motorhead doing Iron Fist. Tom, Trauma, any words to close out this week with? Pretty action-packed week. A lot happened this week. Anything the listeners should know, do, say?
You know, I think I've said everything there is to say, John. I think we've all said everything there is to say. It's time for bed.
Adam White, is it time for bed or is it time to keep on rocking?
If I don't go to bed now, I won't get an hour and a half of sleep before one of my children wakes up screaming. So, you know. Gotta use it up.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.